I'm Tanzina Vega. This is The Takeaway. And a warning to our listeners, this segment will contain some graphic content about sexual assault in the military.
I was preyed upon and then raped by a superior officer.
Last week, Republican Senator Martha McSally from Arizona shared her story of assault before a Senate Armed Forces Subcommittee hearing on sexual assault in the military.
Unlike so many brave survivors, I didn't report being sexually assaulted. Like so many women and men, I didn't trust the system at the time. I blamed myself. I was ashamed and confused. I thought I was strong, but felt powerless. The perpetrators abused their position of power in profound ways.
Senator McSally served for more than 20 years in the Air Force, and she was the first woman to fly in combat. But the experience of being sexually assaulted almost cut that career short.
I stayed silent for many years, but later in my career, as the military grappled with scandals and their wholly inadequate responses, I felt the need to let some people know I, too, was a survivor. I was horrified at how my attempt to share generally my experiences were handled. Like many victims, I felt the system was raping me all over again.
In 2017, reported cases of sexual assault in the military were on the rise. That's according to the Department of Defense, which received nearly 6,800 reports of sexual assault involving military members that year, up 10% from the previous year's numbers. It's something we need to talk about. We start today with a look at the culture of secrecy and fear of retaliation Senator McSally and many others say they've experienced when dealing with sexual assault in the military. And I have two people with me now to talk about the scope of sexual assault in the military today and what needs to happen next. Patricia Murphy is a justice and public health reporter from KUOW who's reported extensively on sexual assault in the military. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Tanzina.
And we're also joined by Lori Manning, a retired captain from the United States Navy and the director of government operations at the Service Women's Action Network. Thanks for joining us, Lori.
Hi, Tanzina and Patricia.
Lori, I want to get started with you. I mentioned at the top of the show we're seeing a 10% rise in reports of sexual assault in the military. What does that statistic actually tell us? Does it tell us that more sexual assaults are happening, or does it tell us that more people are reporting those assaults, or is it still unclear?
It's quite unclear, and it could be both those things. You know, the military hopes, as does everybody, that it means that more people are willing to come forth, but we just don't know.
And what was your reaction to Senator McSally's testimony, Lori?
Well, I was in the room, and it was a small room, so you could see her face quite clearly as she was talking. And I would say my own reaction was the same as everybody else's. Every jaw in that room dropped. Because if Senator McSally, who had a stellar Air Force career, couldn't muster the courage to think that the chain of command and the military would treat her fairly, there is none of us, not one of us, who could say, well, it would treat me fairly.
Patricia, can you help us understand Senator McSally's comments in the broader context of sexual assault in the military? We know this is not a new problem, but how long has it been an issue for the military?
Oh, for many, many years. And it's interesting, when I heard Senator McSally's testimony, I thought to myself, so many of the things about this testimony ring true for so many victims of sexual assault. She waited years to report. She chose not to report. She was retaliated against. She felt this within her career. Those things have always been true about victims of sexual assault, and especially within the military. It's still not a safe place to report this deeply personal event.
Lori, when sexual assault does occur in the military, what are the protocols there? Is there a protocol for responsibility to ensure that these claims are investigated adequately? Is there a protocol to prevent these things from happening?
Well, the protocols for what happens if it's reported are there. That's taken years to get in place. Now, if there's a report, it must be investigated. whether it's the initial report or it's the report of retaliation, which often happens to people who report it. But like many other things, there's a gap between what the protocol says and sometimes in some commands with what actually happens. The other problem is the military has been working on stopping sexual assault, at least since the Tailhook investigation back in the very early 90s. And as far as I can see, they haven't made any progress at all on the stopping of it.
Patricia, one of the things that happens often when we talk about sexual assault, particularly in the military or in a workplace, is that survivors are often forced to spend extended amounts of time with their abuser. What are the effects of that on a survivor?
Well, within the military, oftentimes, right, you're under contract to continue doing your job. So there are very few ways for you to fix that situation within your employment, you know, short of trying to get some kind of, you know, dismissal from the military, which doesn't help your career any. So oftentimes, you know, people are forced to go back into their jobs every day. Maybe that person is a superior officer. Maybe they're not. But the impact of that assault on your job and your ability to do your job impacts your entire unit. And that can have problems whether or not you've even said anything.
So, Lori, in her testimony, we heard Senator McSally say that she was, quote, horrified at how her attempt to share her experiences were handled. How similar is that experience to what other survivors of sexual assault in the military go through?
You know, similar to often what happens, particularly since it's often possible that it's your own boss who has done it to you or somebody else who's got a senior-junior relationship to you, somebody who's senior to you in the military and who you do have to see every day. And there's a lot of retaliation, and the military has done a terrible job at stopping that.
I want to talk also about what happens, like what should happen. And I want to play a clip from Senator McSally's testimony about who should really be in charge of oversight here. Let's take a listen.
We cannot command change from the outside alone. It must be deployed from within. It must be built and constantly maintained and expertly managed by commanders who are themselves educated, conditioned, and given the tools to ensure what you survived and what I survived happens to no warrior under their command. To that end, I very strongly believe that the commander must not be removed from the decision-making responsibility of preventing, detecting, and prosecuting military sexual assault.
Tell us a little bit about what Senator McSally means here in terms of oversight. There have been some debates about whether it should be outside of the military or inside, and McSally here is saying what?
What she's talking about is the Military Justice Improvement Act, which Senator Gillibrand of New York first introduced in Congress back in 2013 and which has still not passed. In the military, when there is a sexual assault, it's the accused's commanding officer who decides whether or not there will be a prosecution. Now, it used to be that he or she also decided whether it would even be investigated. That was changed by Congress about 5 years ago. It now has to be investigated. But it's still what they call general court-martial authority in the military, who's not a lawyer. These are not prosecutors. They're line officers. They might be an infantry person or a surface warfare or a submarine officer in the Navy with no legal training is making the decision on whether the case should be prosecuted. And I was surprised because I was there for Senator McSally's testimony, and everything she said beforehand led you to the conclusion that those commander should not be making that decision. And yet she sat there and said, but we should keep that authority within their purview.
To that point about who has oversight and who's paying attention here, one of the things that keeps getting lost, I think, a little bit in the conversation is what happens when people report. BuzzFeed just came out with a report that said that women in the military often have their medical concerns dismissed. I'm wondering, does that extend to issues of sexual assault, Patricia?
Well, you know, I have heard this anecdotally from women who have reported their sexual assault that their emotional needs were not taken care of, their physical needs, you know, depending on how violent that assault was, may have been treated, you know, on the outset. But yeah, down the line, a woman's pain, a woman's perception of pain is discounted. I've heard this across the board for all kinds of health issues and not just sexual assault. And that's something that extends to women too. You know, they have, as a member of the military in a male-dominated field, you have this, you know, you want to suck it up. You don't want to be that person. So that's ingrained in you as a woman participating in a male-dominated military. You know, I think there are individuals within this system who are trying to do good work, but overall they're working in what is really an untenable system for victims of sexual assault.
Well, and the other thing that's interesting as we're talking about this, and Laura, you mentioned this early in the conversation, was, you know, some of the earlier examples we've heard about sexual assault in the military. It's 2019. What do we need to see happen so that we can prevent this from happening in the future?
The military culture needs a complete overhaul, as does the U.S. culture that surrounds it. You know, I've been following all the Me Too stuff, and it seems to me some of the perpetrators have very strange ideas of what consent is. And I think we need to do a much better job raising kids right from the beginning to understand that sort of stuff. And we've got to stop the sexism. We've got to stop allowing people to get away with sexism, because the sexism is what causes disrespect of women, and that can lead to sexual assault. We've got to teach respect and the dignity of other people.
And Patricia, what about you? Are you watching anything at a policy level that you think could help prevent sexual assault going forward?
I think that Lori's point is absolutely accurate and spot on. I think the thing that we're not talking about in this conversation is the role that alcohol plays in a lot of sexual assaults. A majority of the military, a good portion of the military, are young people under 25. This is an exciting time for them sexually. This is an exciting time for them in terms of their growth. Their life is, you know, challenging in the military, and it's extreme. When they go out and they decompress, alcohol is present a lot of the time, and that can have a significant impact on decision making and how assaults take place.
Patricia Murphy is a justice and public health reporter from KUOW, and Lori Manning is a retired captain from the United States Navy and the director of government operations at the Service Women's Action Network. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.